All right.
Hello.
Hi, guys.
Welcome back
to the Flick Chicks podcast.
I'm Jane.
And I'm Allison.
And how are you, Allison?
I'm good. It doesn't feel like Sunday.
No, it doesn't.
It's kind of late because it doesn't feel like Sunday.
No, I kind of lost track of time, honestly.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't really know what day of the week it is.
No. It's whenever there's like a holiday.
Yeah.
It like, in the beginning, it's just, the whole week
just kind of like, move forward a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we had Monday off.
Yeah. So it was really weird.
Yeah.
So I'm
feeling a little off, but that's okay.
But yeah, but it's like, I mean, not bad.
Just no.
Like, kind of
weird. It's nice outside. The weather's finally cooling down.
I know. I hope it stays.
I know. Yeah. Which is nice. And nothing much is going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't really have anything to report. Oh, I started watching Westworld.
Oh, is it good?
It's good. I liked it.
I'm going to watch Dave, I think.
It's so good. I've seen like 3 or 4 episodes. But it's really, I really like it.
I think I'm going to watch
it. It's very funny. I've seen like the first episode and it's excellent. It's an excellent pilot.
Good. I've heard it's like, what, FX, is that what it's on?
Yeah.
Apparently it's like FX's most watched show ever.
Really? Over American Horror Story?
Yeah, over American Horror Story, over Always Sunny, over all of it. Which I'm like, that's insane.
That's crazy.
That's insane. It's had one season.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know.
That's wild.
I know. I was like, wow. It must be really good then.
It is really good. I really like it. But yeah, so today we are doing our third Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg production.
Yeah.
This is Pineapple Express, which is their most commercially successful film.
Yes.
This had a budget of like 25 mil and made like over 100 million.
Yeah, 26 mil and it grossed 102 mil.
Yeah.
So.
Real good.
Yeah,
real good money on that.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about that plot. In 1937, a soldier, Bill Hader, in a military facility is being observed through two-way mirror smoking marijuana and reveling in his euphoria about what he hates about the army.
I feel like a nice little pat of butter melting on a big pile of flapjacks.
Yep. A high-ranking officer closes the project and deems marijuana illegal. 70 years later, in 2007, Dale Denton, Seth Rogen, a process server visits his drug dealer, Saul Silver, who is played by James Franco,
yeah,
to buy marijuana. Saul says he may know Dale's next customer, Ted Jones, who's played by Gary Cole. At Ted's house, Dale witnesses Ted and a police officer, Carol Brazier, which is Rosie Perez,
mm-hmm,
shoot a man dead. While fleeing, Dale leaves his roach containing Pineapple Express, a rare strain of marijuana.
It's so funny when he, like, starts ugly coughing.
Yeah, he's like, oh.
And throws it out and then, like, hits the police car when he's trying to back up.
Yeah, he's trying to, like, he's parallel parked.
Yeah.
But, like, incredibly close to these two cars. Actually, he was fine. And then the lady cop parked way too close to him.
Yeah.
But, Ted identifies the strain and sends his henchman, Badolfsky and Matheson, that's to Red.
Craig Robinson.
Yeah, and then to Red is Danny McBride, a dealer who tells him about Saul. Yeah, so basically, like, Ted is the person who got Pineapple Express
He supplies for Red, and Red supplies for Saul.
Mm.
So Red gave Saul the Pineapple Express, and Saul gave Dale the Pineapple Express, so they know that wherever they were going to find the person, they would have to go back to Red.
Right. So, back at Saul's apartment, Dale learns Ted is a drug lord and could trace the roach.
I think he's, like, crazy about murdering. Well, that's not good!
Dale and Saul visit Red, who reveals that Ted knows who they are and intends to kill them. Dale and Saul decide they must leave the city. They sell Pineapple Express to raise bus fare, but Dale is arrested by police liaison officer Barbara Cuyo King. Dale tells Barbara that he witnessed Brazier and Ted murder a man. Barbara has long been suspicious of Brazier's corruption and says she will investigate. However, Saul, thinking that it's Brazier driving, hijacks the police car. Brazier hears on the police radio of Dale's arrest and pursues Dale and Saul in a high-speed chase, but they escape. After Dale and Saul argue and split up, Saul is kidnapped and held in Ted's lair beneath the same military facility from 1937. Dale enlists Red's help to rescue Saul. Red backs out at the last minute and Dale is captured. While Dale and Saul are waiting to be killed, they reconcile and plan an escape. Asian mobsters attack the barn to avenge their fellow gangster's death, the murder that Dale witnessed. Dale and Saul free themselves but are caught by Matheson. A brawl ensues. Red reappears and drives his car through the barn, saving Saul, but is shot by Brazier. A mobster sets off a bomb, killing Ted and setting fire to the barn. Red's car explodes and lands on Brazier, killing her. Dale carries Saul from the burning barn, and Red, wounded but alive, also escapes and reconciles with them. They talk about their adventure over breakfast at a diner before Saul's grandmother picks them up and takes them to the hospital.
Red is, like, indestructible.
Yeah, literally, Red, this is, like, the funniest bit. Red gets shot twice.
Gets hit over the head with a bong.
He gets, yeah, he's thrown into a wall.
Head hits a toilet.
Head hits a toilet. He gets shot twice. He then gets shot another, like, two times.
Yeah.
And crashes his car through a building and survives a fire.
And then he just comes out and he's...
He's like, hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
And they're like, you're alive? Like, yeah.
During this whole time, Dale has a weird young girlfriend.
Oh, yeah. I don't know why they didn't mention that.
It's kind of important. So Amber Heard, the worst, mm-hmm. Plays his 18-year-old girlfriend.
Who's
still in high school. He's 25. I would say it would be a lot less weird if she was not still in high school.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that must be a choice.
Yeah.
Nobody thought, oh, that'll be fine.
Yeah.
Nobody was, Seth Rogen was like, you know what would be completely acceptable? yeah, and like, there's this big thing where basically like, she gets involved because he has in his apartment like,
Her school books. Her report cards.
And her address on his fridge. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
And then he comes over. He's supposed to come to dinner with her parents. Mm-hmm. And he basically...
I love the dinner scene.
He basically only does it out of spite because...
Well, no, he does it because he forgets. He's going to the dinner.
The only reason he agrees is because there's this guy that's, like, kind of hitting on his girlfriend.
Who's her age.
And he's, like, gets jealous.
Yeah.
And so he goes... And then he forgets about it because of all the chaos
and weed.
The murder. And so he forgets, and he shows up to save her, but he's, like, really late to the night of the dinner, and he's like, That's
why I'm here,
of course, yep. And then he's like, I'm lying, we need to go.
And then the dad's like, you're high, I'm coming back, and I'm coming back with a gun.
But then they end up believing him. I don't know how he convinces them, really, because it doesn't feel like much changes.
Yeah.
Other than he's just like, no, seriously, and they're like, okay.
Okay.
So they leave, they go to a motel, they call, and then basically they break up. They break up because of whatever stupid reason. Because she's like, you're a loser. And he's like,
You're a bitch.
And so they break up, and then he calls her, like, sobbing over a payphone. She's clearly been waiting for his call.
Yeah.
And then they reconcile, and she's like, oh my god, I want to get married to you. And then he's just like...
He says, I've made a mistake. You're way too immature.
And then he's basically like, yeah, you're immature. And she's like, what? You're immature. And he's like, yeah, I am, but I'm older than you. And then he basically just says, if you would take me back, there's no way you're mature enough for me.
Exactly.
And it's like, that's true.
That's true. He's right.
And so they break up again. And then that's over. It's just such a funny little plot.
Yeah.
The, like, idea that she would take him back.
Yeah, and like, he's like, no.
It's right. It's true, though.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know. I'm trying to think of any other things they left out. They didn't really leave out any major plot
points.
Well,
there's that fun scene where they go to the woods to hide.
Oh, yeah.
And then they get really paranoid. And they, like, destroy their phones.
Yes.
And then they get in the car and they listen to talk radio. And then they go to sleep and the car dies. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a really great part where the cop is... They're like, the cops can trace our phones, like, maybe if we're not even using them. So Dale smashes his phone on a rock.
Yeah.
And then...
Saul just throws
his phone into the woods. And he's like, that's so stupid. You need to smash your phone. You can't just throw it. And then they can't find it. So they give up. And eventually, like... There's a scene with the cop later, they're like, one of them smashed their phone on a rock, and the other one threw it into the woods, and then tried to find it, but then couldn't find it, and so they left, and it's like, how would you possibly? This is not how phones work, especially not at this time.
No.
What is this, like 2009?
2008 when this was made.
2008. This is not how cell phones work.
No.
You cannot track phones like that. If you could, a lot more people wouldn't be in jail, probably. This movie is, like, so bizarre.
It's strange.
It's, like, you can just tell it's meant for you to be high while you're
watching. That's, like, what it's tailored
for. It's 100% you are... I mean, you obviously don't need to be high because people have enjoyed it for a long time sober, and many people saw this in the theater, I'm sure, not high.
Yeah.
But it's certainly a movie that I feel like probably is best enjoyed.
I think because their thought process, like, only makes sense if you're high.
Yeah, because they have terrible thought processes. There's, like,
but then, like, when you're high, you're like, that makes kind of sense.
I see why they're not taking the best step. Like, I see what's impeding them. Also, it helps with, like, there's so much, like, miscommunication in this, especially between Saul and Dale.
Yeah.
That you're like, if they weren't high, it wouldn't be a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
But they, like, can't listen to each other when they're high. One thing I did tell Jane, I was like, why would you continue to get high in this situation? Like, at some point, isn't it kind of like, listen, bro, we're in some serious trouble. We need to stop it. I was just, like, imagining, and she was like, well, you know, they're stoners. And I was like, yeah, but Jane, imagine, like, if you and I were in this situation. I witnessed a murder.
And then we're sitting around, and I just spark up a joint.
And we're on the run from a drug dealer, and you're like, well, now seems like as good a time of any. And I was like, no! It's not a good time. It's a very bad time. You need to put that down. We need alert.
We need all of our cognitive faculties.
There's literally a point in the movie where Seth Rogen says something like, I don't know if you've noticed, but we're not very high functioning when we're high. Or we're really low functioning when we're high. And he's like, what are you talking about? We function fine. Like, no, you don't, clearly. But then also there's, like, some situations, I don't know if they would have gotten out of them if they weren't high.
Exactly.
It's like, you're just acting on pure instinct at that point. You know what I mean? And sometimes that's good.
Yeah.
The problem is pure instinct isn't great when you're trying to plan.
Exactly.
But pure instinct is great when you're in a bad situation.
Yeah, I think that whenever they're just, like, on the run, I think it's probably a good thing that they're high because they are just...
Yeah, when they're in the car chase and stuff, which seems silly. You shouldn't probably never be high behind the wheel of a vehicle. But these guys, they're professionals.
I mean, obviously it's like established from the beginning that Dale drives high all the time.
All the time, yeah. Look, they're professionals.
Yeah, they know what to do.
Yeah.
They have learned how to do things.
It's the pure instinct aspect
that
allows them to make choices that can't be tracked. But, like, when you're trying to come up with a plan on what to do, being high, not the best choice. Because you just, how are you supposed to figure it out?
Yeah.
It's too, they can't do it. And they just fall asleep in the middle of planning all the time. It's a really big issue.
It is a really big issue.
It's a big issue. It really impedes their progress.
I also love Saul and his bubby.
Oh, I love Bubby.
The bubby.
She's so sweet. When he throws coffee in Matheson's face.
Yeah.
And he just scars up his whole face. Oh, so good. I definitely was, oh my God, what was I thinking? Something about on the line of when they were high.
I mean.
Like them being, oh, nope, I've forgotten. Nope.
I had it, but
it's gone. It was something about them, being high and smoking weed. Oh, dang it, what is it? I keep, like, almost getting it, but then I can't get the end part of it.
You know,
I can get the beginning of the idea, but I can't figure out where the train was going. Like, the tracks are gone.
The tracks are gone.
We're Polar Express on the ice right now, you know what I mean? Maybe one day we'll get back on. I don't think we will. I don't know. I really can't figure out what
That's
I was
okay.
going to say.
I watched this interview one time with Seth Rogen, and he was specifically talking about the scene where Saul tries to kick open the windshield and his foot just goes through. He was like, well, yeah, one time I was just smoking with my partner, Evan Goldberg, and we were like thinking about like, action tropes. And that was, you know, we were thinking about people like kicking open the windshield, and we were like, well, what would really happen if that happened? And probably your foot would just go through.
Yeah.
So then
I wouldn't be able to break it.
No, I wouldn't either. My foot would also just go through.
My foot wouldn't even reach the windshield, so it really wouldn't be a problem. I would be like, not working.
Get away. I have some interesting trivia.
Okay.
So Seth Rogen originally wrote the part of Saul Silver for himself to play. It wasn't until the table read that he realized James Franco would be funnier in the role of Saul. Seth Rogen rolled every joint and cross joint in the film himself.
Wow.
James Franco's line, "It smells like God's vagina," was actually originally improvised by Seth Rogen. James Franco told him it wasn't funny, then used the line in the next take. The fight scene between Saul and Carol was, which is the police officer,
yes.
And Carol was the, for the most part, improvised. Because of this, Franco was worried that he would hurt Perez and would ask her for permission to do certain things during the fight. In the end, Perez actually did get hurt and got a bruise after Franco accidentally bit her too hard on the thigh. But Perez didn't tell him until after filming was done, so he wouldn't feel bad.
You definitely should never improvise a fight. That's a horrible idea.
Yeah, terrible.
I mean, just like from an artistic standard, all fights should be completely choreographed. Every single person, you should know exactly what's going on at all time. You guys be like, well, fight. It's like, but
what?
I'm an actor.
This is the first marijuana themed comedy to gross over $100 million worldwide.
Wow, that's funny.
Yeah. The diner scene near the end of the film was not in the script. It was improvised on the spot by the actors.
The camera guys are like, we gotta do what?
I love, this is my favorite one. When James Franco smashes the bong over Danny McBride's head, it was supposed to be a fake breakaway bong, so McBride could not get, could take part in the stunt. However, it was filled with some water, and when Franco actually smashed it, McBride was mildly hurt.
Huh. It was, yeah.
While filming the scene in which Saul runs into a tree, James Franco became overzealous and actually ran into the tree. And he had to get three stitches.
A lot of people getting hurt on this film set for a bunch of nothing, a bunch of no reason.
Seth Rogen told Rolling Stone that the filmmakers originally wanted a budget of $50 million, but was only able to secure a $25 million budget due to the drug-heavy subject matter.
And now they're like, James Franco and Seth Rogen in a drug movie? Lots of money.
Saul's grandmother was not part of the original script. James Franco came up with that part, suggesting that it would be funny for his drug dealer character to have a bubby.
Yeah, it is funny.
It's very funny. Let's see. Interesting. What? Seth Rogen had to practice yoga to be more limber for the more physical scenes in the movie.
For this?
Yeah.
That's funny.
I think that's about all we have on that.
I literally can't stop thinking about what I was trying to say earlier. I can't stop thinking. I'm really trying to think about it. I literally can't think about it.
I'm sorry.
What was it? It was a good point. I know it was. And I know it was a good point because I can't stop thinking about it. What was it?
Well, what would you give this movie?
I give it like a 9 out of 10. It's pretty good.
I mean, it is the definitive stoner action comedy.
I agree with that.
If you're looking for a stoner action comedy, this is the one to go with.
I agree that. I mean, I don't know if this is my favorite stoner movie, to be honest, because I think I still am of the opinion that Cabin in the Woods is
my favorite stoner movie,
but I also just it appeals to me in a way.
Definitely. Niche audience is us.
It's like Oh Hello. I know Oh Hello isn't like a stoner thing, but
if you've ever been high watching Oh Hello, it kind of is.
It's kind of just like, it feels, when you're just watching it and you're 100% fine, first time I ever saw it, I hadn't drank anything.
Yeah,
done anything.
We watched it together.
I was 100% good. And I'm watching it, and I'm just like, this is what it feels like.
This is a fever dream.
This is what it feels like to be high, I think. This is what it feels like. And A Cabin in the Woods is really similar to that for me. So, this is certainly not, it's not taking the place of my favorite stoner movie. I had never seen this before, though. Definitely very good. I think this movie really captures, like, very truly what stoner vibes are.
I agree.
Like, you very much, like, every word that they say, you're like, that makes sense.
That makes sense, yeah.
Like, it feels very realistic.
Yes.
It feels very realistic.
Remember whenever Dale witnesses the murder, and he runs up to Saul's house, and he's, like, trying to tell him that he
can't get the buzzer.
He's like, lady, a lady and a guy, a lady and a guy, another guy. Wow, dude, that's like a massacre.
And he's like, no, just one guy, just one guy. And he can't get the buzzer to open. And then he keeps being like, oh, buzz me in. He's like, I'm buzzing you in, dude. And he's like, no, on three
or at 1, 2, 3, go?
No, on three. And he's like, 1, 2, buzz. And you're like, no.
He throws up on his printer.
Yeah, what the heck? I did, whenever that scene happened in the movie, I was like, of all the places you could throw up.
Yeah.
He, like, rushed around and then chose the printer to throw up on. Of all the items in the room, he was like, I'll throw up on this one. It's like, buddy, throw up on the floor. The floor is better than the printer. I, too, would throw up. That would be horrible.
That'd be scary. That'd be terrifying.
Watching someone just get shot.
Get shot in the back of the head, yeah.
Also, the fact that he serves people is just a weird thing that doesn't have any bearing on the movie at all, but is kind of funny.
It is funny that he's, like, a process server.
Because he gets to say things like, you've been served. It's like, so.
And I just think it's funny to imagine, like, a process server who's high all the time.
I mean, if you are a process server, it doesn't feel like you have a lot to do.
It feels like that's kind of what you would need to get through the day.
It also just is like,
You're sitting in your car most of the day.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, what else are you doing? You're just going to give people pieces of paper.
Yeah.
And they won't be happy, but whatever.
Whatever.
That's a weird job.
Yeah, it is.
A lot of times,
when everyone's like, get a real job, I'm like, he has a real job. It is a real job.
I feel like people just get served a lot through the actual mail.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you serve divorce papers, well, usually if you serve divorce papers, you need to serve them yourself.
Yeah.
But you could use a process server because you have to have someone that's like a notary or whatever witness it. You have to have a witness to it. So I guess like they can do that because they are able to be a witness to that since it's their job. But it's also kind of weird. It's like, just do it yourself. It's like, how many things a day does he need to serve? Like, how many? I don't know. I've never known anyone that was served by a process server.
Me either.
Ever. Anything. Jury duty, none of it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to serve on jury duty one day. I've never been called.
I think I'd be great at it.
I've never been called to serve on
jury. I think we would both be, like,
I'd be the really fucking annoying. I mean, most things I think you serve on juries and it's like, this is a pretty clear-cut thing. It's like, robbery. Mm-hmm. But, like, I wanna be on a jury for, like, a murder
Me
trial.
Too.
Because I just know I'd be, like, the annoying one that makes everyone stay.
Yes. I have a question.
What is that? It's a movie or a TV show where basically, like, everyone's gonna make him guilty and then there's one person.
12 Angry Jurors?
Yeah, is it? And then they change, every single person's mind.
Yeah, I was in that play.
Yeah. And they're like, actually. Like, that's me. Me arguing and changing every single person's mind except one person. Wow.
Anyway,
12 Angry Jurors.
This is a really good movie.
It is a good movie.
It's very fun.
It's a funny movie. It's hard to talk about movies like this because when there's really nothing wrong with them.
Yeah. I mean, this is like a really good stoner comedy.
Yeah. I mean, it does exactly what it's supposed to do.
Exactly.
It's just hard. It's easy to talk about movies where there's a lot of, like, stuff to talk about, like, explain.
Yeah.
Like, or it's easy to talk about movies that are bad or that have weird things in them because you can kind of, like, talk about those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
But something like this is really hard to talk about because there's not really anything wrong with it.
It's very good. It's funny.
It's funny. It does exactly what it's meant to do. It's well written. It's well acted. It's all of it's fine.
Yeah.
There's nothing crazy about it. Crazy bad about it.
Yeah.
There's nothing. It's not deep.
No, it's not.
It's very much exactly what you see.
It's like a buddy comedy.
It's a buddy comedy. We don't cover a lot of those on this show.
No, we don't.
For a reason.
Yeah, it's true.
I don't know, it's like, it's Seth Rogen, baby. It's exactly what you'd expect.
If you love Seth Rogen, I'm sure you're gonna love this movie.
I mean, yeah, if you like anything Seth Rogen has ever done, you'll like this.
Review?
Yeah, I have a review. 1 out of 10.
Okay.
Another Far-Gin stupid movie in the Mother Far-Gin Tropic Thunder.
What? Mother? Oh, like motherfucking?
Another Fargan. Oh, they're not saying fucking. Yeah,
they are. That's what they're doing.
Let me replace the Fargan
with fucking.
Another fucking stupid movie in the motherfucking Tropic Thunder. It still doesn't make that.
Why is it a Tropic Thunder genre? This doesn't have anything to do with Tropic Thunder.
I don't know.
Just because Danny McBride's in both of them.
You know Danny McBride, the genre.
The genre maker,
the
yeah.
The genre Danny McBride movie.
Yeah.
This is the end, exactly like that's this.
Exactly like Tropic Thunder.
They're all exactly like each other, I think.
I mean, whenever I think of Pineapple Express, all I think about is Tropic Thunder, the film set in Vietnam.
Yeah.
About war.
I mean, yeah. You know. It's what I think about. It's sort of like anything that has Danny McBride. It's like, to me, it's just Tropic Thunder. Yeah, I was like, okay, so the title makes no sense. Also, the way it's spelled is like Far-Jin.
Which is very confusing. It like, took me a minute to figure out that he meant
like
fucking.
Fargan? I think that it's like, you know how some
Mother Fargan.
Yeah, like you're from Minnesota and, yeah. you don't want to say like, it was saying like frick would have even been better.
Frick would be way better. Mother frickin', that'd be way better.
But I don't know if they're trying to do so. Is it supposed to be some sort of like, it's supposed to be a witty thing or something?
I don't, it's not tell. Reading.
I can't tell. Okay, what we'll move on from that. The entire cast, director David Gordon Green, and writers Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, had to be drunk and or stoned to put this piece of junk together.
I mean, they're always high when they write
this.
This
is, I thought this was hilarious. I was like, yes.
That's the point. That,
like, I was like, yes.
I'm like, you realize that there is a market for this.
He just says they had to have been stoned to write this. And you're like, they were.
They definitely were.
They absolutely were. That's the point. And the audience has to be drunk or stoned to see this film.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, they would just walk out. Hilarious. You do not get this. You automatically are not seeing the point. The fact that this person won't say fucking and just said fargan.
I know.
See, I mean, I don't, how much more do you need?
Straight fucking edge.
Straight fucking edge. Straight fargan edge. I mean.
You should get that on a shirt.
Yeah.
Straight fargan edge.
I mean, you have to be stoned to watch this movie. You're like, yeah, that's kind of the point of the movie.
That's like what the movie's for.
The movie is for stoned people. This movie is supposed to be a comedy and a crime thriller.
I know, it's supposed
a
to be like...
A crime thriller!
It's like, an action stoner comedy!
Imagine Seven. Or like Zodiac, but it's a stoner comedy.
Oh my god.
It's a stoner comedy and it's Seven. You're like, no!
They're like at a crime scene and
they're like smoking up.
Smoking a
That's a good idea, actually.
Trademark.
TM. We're doing that. We're going to make the first stoner comedy crime thriller. But like Tropic Thunder, 2008, I find nothing humorous, and there is nothing thrilling about this dismal film. So here's why they think it's like Tropic Thunder. Because Tropic Thunder is a comedy, but also a thriller?
No.
No.
It's a comedy.
Yeah, 100%.
And, like, some action elements, but, like, I would say that Pineapple Express has more action elements.
I mean, here's the thing. I think, like, just because a movie... it's sort of like... Remember when we did Coffee and Kareem, everyone?
Oh, that's the worst movie
ever. I think we only did that for patrons, but...
Terrible.
Coffee and Kareem. That's like saying, like, Coffee and Kareem is an action movie.
It is.
You're like, it's a bad buddy cop film, is what it is. Like, to say that that is... To say Tropic Thunder is like a thriller.
Yeah.
Also, this person doesn't really seem to know what thrillers are. They seem to just think anything with like an ounce of plot is like a thriller. You're like, I mean, I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's thrilling.
It is thrilling in the sense that I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, you're like, that's just a story, bro. That's just...
That's a plot.
Beginning, middle, end. Okay. The only crime is that investors and ticket buyers waste their money on this film. I mean, okay, there is a crime that happens in this film, but yeah. I don't think you can call it a crime film.
Mm-mm.
It's not a crime drama.
I mean, technically, smoking weed is a crime.
That's true. This whole movie is about crimes.
Yeah.
It's a crime some places. It was a crime at the time.
It was a crime. I think this is set in California. But at the time, it was still a crime in California.
Yeah.
So, I think, but obviously if it were made now, it wouldn't be.
Yeah. One day, this movie isn't really going to hold up anymore.
Because weed's going to be legal everywhere.
Because weed will be legal, and people will be like, wow.
Wow.
A time when
you I know, it's going to be like, freaking, what is it called? Banishing all alcohol.
Oh, Prohibition.
Prohibition. It'll be like a Prohibition movie.
Yeah. The tagline, put this in your pipe and smoke it, should tell you what the filmmakers are really promoting. Illegal street drugs.
The they're trying to...
They're trying to rag on this film because it's about weed.
But that's the point.
But the movie is about weed, bro.
That's like, what they marketed
it. Did you think... He's like, this movie is about weed. Hey, everyone. Hey, everyone. Pineapple Express is a film about smoking weed. And everyone's like, yes, thank you.
Thank you. We knew that.
It wasn't trying to hide it. So they're promoting illegal street drugs. The plot, a stoner and a dealer are forced to go on the run from the police after, also all this is in quotes. I'm going to emphasize the quotes in my voice.
Okay.
A stoner and a dealer.
They are stoner and a dealer, though.
Are forced to go on the run from the police.
They are the police.
After a pothead witnesses a cop commit a murder. Is completely distorted. The police are the bad guys, and the dealer and the pothead and the stoner are the good guys.
That's so many.
I know, I mean, it, also, this guy is so straight edge. It's insane.
I know.
It's like, to the point, it's so straight edge, it's like delusion.
Yes.
it's like he truly came in thinking, oh, this is going to be just like a comedy thriller.
Yeah.
He didn't know what thrillers were, and he hadn't seen the trailer.
He hadn't seen the cover, which is Seth Rogen, James Franco, and Danny McBride in a huge cloud of smoke.
He hadn't seen any of that. He comes in expecting a nice, wholesome movie about a crime family, or perhaps a cop solves a murder. Instead, it's about dirty cops. This guy would hate Coffee and Kareem, to be honest.
True.
I mean, I hate Coffee and Kareem.
Different reasons, though.
Different reasons, but, like, he would hate it because, like, the cops are bad.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, that does, you know, that happens. I mean, in real life, they didn't come up with this idea themselves. It happens. The continuity of the film is confusing. And I have difficulty following.
I don't think there's anything confusing about
the continuity. What about the continuity is wrong? This guy says a lot of words.
But I'm not exactly sure if you're understanding them.
Continuity is not, I think, the word you're... Plot might be the word you're looking for. But I think continuity kind of implies that things aren't the same from scene to scene. And that's not what's happening. Okay, but please excuse me, because I may just be too... I'm about to say a slur. Retarded. Like Tropic Thunder, this movie is absolutely awful. I think this person's just mad at Tropic Thunder.
Listen, I don't like Tropic Thunder that much, but I think that it doesn't have anything to do with Pineapple Express except for the fact that Danny McBride's in it.
I think this guy just hates Danny McBride.
I think that's what the issue is.
I wonder if this person's written on a review for This Is the End. They're like, just like Tropic Thunder.
Danny McBride.
Just like Pineapple Express. This Is the End is a bad movie. And you're like, what? It's no Groundhog. It's no Happy Death Day to you. But so I can't help but wonder why anyone would ever bother to see this film. Because I wanted to be completely honest and truthful in giving my review of both films, I stayed to the end of each film. Is this person combining their Tropic Thunder and their
Pineapple Express reviews?
I don't know.
They were both released in 2008. What if they went to the theater and they saw both
of them? A double feature.
A double feature.
And they were like, I hate these. I just spent 4 hours of my life. I don't know why. He doesn't know why I stayed to the end of the film.
Okay.
But perhaps it's because there's a fine line between love and hate. This person is saying nothing. I think this person has, like, no grasp of English. I think this person might be an alien. Like, I think maybe...
Crab person.
I think this... Yeah, it's a crab person. Like, he knows the language, but he doesn't really understand, like, the way you're supposed to use it. He gets, like, the concept.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, like, have a firm understanding. It's kind of like when you're talking to, like, a seven-year-old, and they're like... Oh, I'm going to quote here from the Florida Project.
Yeah.
Which is like, don't jump in the water because I had to go to the hospital. And you're like...
What?
Yeah. Okay. You know, have you seen that meme? It's like, when kids say some stupid shit like that, you have to be like, damn, yeah, okay, because it's good for their development.
Yes, I saw that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. I rate both films a 1 out of 10, and I can't understand how anyone could rate either film any higher.
So, if you wanted to find this Tropic Thunder review, you go to the Pineapple Express IMDb.
And then you're gonna look under the one-star reviews. You're gonna find Len9876. And you're gonna Look for the title that says Fargan in it. I promise it's the only one.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's almost like no one else would say that word.
My advice is to help someone or volunteer for a good cause and make worthwhile the use of your time. This person, like, clearly just had no idea what they were coming into.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Strange. Fargan.
I hate that this is not Tropic. I hate that this is not at all like Tropic Thunder. But I also hate Tropic
Thunder.
But I hate Tropic Thunder, and I need everyone to know that I wonder if I could find this person. I wonder if this person, like, has an account.
Ooh, that'd be nice.
Let's see something. I'm gonna have to go to the Pineapple Express. Scroll down till I find it. Here it is. It's not far. Len, I don't know how to search this. Can I do that?
I don't know if you can.
Oh, see all reviews. Yeah, I can. This person watches a lot of films I've never heard of. And he gives a lot of people bad reviews. So, some movie called The Russell Girl got 10 out of 10.
Oh.
Thomas Kincaid's Christmas Cottage got 10 out of 10. This person just seems like they are really, like...
I've never seen any of these movies. I've never even heard of any of
these. Let's just start reading some of the titles. I want to read some of the titles. Gran Torino. Okay.
Okay.
Meke Blanc. It looks like a...
French film, maybe.
Yeah, it might be a... Yeah. Cactus. Feel the Noise. Christmas on Division Street. Bernard and Doris. The Russell Girl. Thomas Kincaid's Christmas Cottage. Nobody's Fool. Americanizing Shelley. Holding Trevor. Columbus Day. Lost Stallions. The Journey Home. Brokeback Mountain. He liked Brokeback Mountain.
It's a good movie.
Get Smart. He hated Get Smart. Divine Intervention. Zygist. I Will Always Love You. Tropic Thunder. Oh my god, he wrote one!
Oh my god!
Okay,
let's read it.
Okay, this is Tropic Thunder. He did write a review. I wonder if he's going to talk about Pineapple. We're finding out in real time. Here we go. Usually I read these. Okay, 1 out of 10. I can't believe I paid to see this mother, Lucille Ball, who many still consider to be the first lady of comedy, never resorted to obscene language, labels, name-calling, or sex to effectively deliver her special, unique brand of humor. Are they
comparing Tropic Thunder to Lucille Ball?
To I Love Lucy, yeah. Lucy emphasized her versatile acting abilities and did not depend on animation or special effects.
I mean...
How dare you use technology to your advantage in a film? You know, in the 1950s when computers weren't invented, they didn't use computers.
They didn't use anything back then.
They didn't use computers in the 1950s. You're like, yeah, they didn't. Nobody did. In fact, a script should focus on a strong storyline rather than anything that detracts from it. It is always pathetic and sad when laughter becomes derisive and is at somebody else's expense. Oh my god, this guy is straight fucking edge. An actor must be artistic and creative, but he or she should also be responsible. Derisive laughter is like a loaded gun which explodes in somebody's face. Such laughter is tragic and anything but funny. This is America, and in a free democracy, each of us has the right to assembly and the right to speak. You have the right to your opinion, and I have a right to mine. I give it a Fargan 1 out of a mother Fargan 10.
A Fargan 1 out of a mother Fargan 10.
Support Heath Ledger and go see The Dark.
What? Support Heath Ledger?
Oh my god, hold on. Ah. Go see The Dark Knight more than once, if necessary, and topple Tropic Thunder.
That's so weird.
What?
That's strange.
This person's weird. I want to see if they have any other... a lot of these I've never even heard of. Also, that was written after Pineapple Express. That review was written after...
So they wrote the Pineapple Express review before Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
That seems kind of counterproductive. It does. If you were going to talk about Tropic Thunder the entire time you were reviewing Pineapple Express.
Also, does this person think... I mean, I know we're doing this right now, coming to their profile and looking at all their reviews, but you know, like, most people just go to the movie and look at the reviews.
Yeah.
This person hates Cloverfield. But they love this movie called I Want Candy.
Weird.
Which looks like a sex comedy. I don't... There's a lot of stuff on here that looks pretty like...
6 out of 10 Twilight.
Ooh. Read the book. Ah! I love this. Ah, this is boring, though. They're not, like, yelling about how it's dirty. I want more, like... I'm very confused because some of these are like, some of these look like pretty raunchy films.
Yeah.
And he's saying nothing. Like, he gave The House Bunny 8 out of 10.
I would say The House Bunny is...
Like, I love The House
Bunny. I love The House Bunny as
well. But, like, how are you gonna be
like... How much different is it from Pineapple Express?
How much different is it from, like, either Tropic Thunder? How much, like, different is the comedy?
How much different? Not very much different.
I want to read it. We still have time, so I feel like, let's read it. Let's just, like, explore this guy's psyche.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, House Bunny, 8 out of 10. An empowering uplift with some funny and dot, dot, dot. I am gay. I keep God in the center of my life, and God loves me.
Oh.
God has taught me to love the beautiful and the handsome, but more importantly, has taught me to love myself and others for what they are inside.
Oh.
This film positively reinforces what God has taught me.
The House Bunny, the most godly movie like, I've ever seen.
I think it's because it turns out she's, like, not a dumb slut. Yeah. It's, like, Legally Blonde, kind of.
Weird,
but
though.
But more raunchy. The House Bunny is a light comedy, but it's not silly. This film demonstrates that someone can have beauty or brawn and still have a brain. And that someone can be proud rather than carrying around a heavy and burdensome guilt. That's right, a person can have intellect, intelligence, and pride. As a gay person, I respect the beauty, the intellect, the intelligence, and pride of women. Even though my sexual preference is for men. Why are they talking about
this
so much?
Why are they including that they're gay? I don't really understand.
As a gay person, do I despise and hate women? Absolutely not.
What?
Wow, I'm only going to read this guy's reviews from now on, I think. In fact, I absolutely adore Shelley, Anna Faris, and Hugh Hefner. I continually read everything I can get my hands on, and I'm an avid subscriber of Playboy magazine. Years ago, I was a volunteer for the Salvation Army, and the Playboy Club generously contributed to help others. Like Paul Newman, Hugh Hefner has quite a heart and quite a mind. Both Paul Newman and Hugh Hefner have an extensive history of charitable philanthropy. I'll never forget Paul Newman or Hugh Hefner all for their generosity.
What?
I know. I just happened to be physically disabled, and when I was a young boy, the Salvation Army left a gift package at my front door. Wow, my family was poor and my mother had just died of ovarian cancer.
Oh.
I was only 12 and my mother was 39 years young. This is his life story. We have found his life story. My mother, the matriarch of my family, yep, that's what a mom is, was my sun, my moon, and my stars. Her death was quite a loss and the Playboy Club lessened the loss. What? Sad, but, like, really funny. By contributing to the Salvation Army. And Hugh Hefner even let June Allison, my heroine since I was a little boy of 5, stay at his home, Mayfair, in London. Wow, he let a hot woman stay at his home. What a gem. Years later, Paul Newman opened up the Hole in the Wall camp near my home in Ashford, Connecticut, for the disabled and terminally ill children. Because of Paul Newman and Hugh Hefner, I found love at or close to my front doorstep. Okay, I think this person, like, just really loves Playboy because it got him through some hard times.
Yeah.
And so he's just completely rose-colored glasses when it comes to House Bunny because she is a Playboy model. Like, I don't think he's even, I don't even think he watched the movie, to be honest. Oh, well, here we go. In House Bunny, Shelley is abandoned as a baby on someone else's front doorstep. Like Steve McQueen in real life, Shelley's only childhood home is an orphanage. Why would you say that? Like Steve McQueen. But as she physically develops, Shelley finds herself becoming more and more likable. And as destiny or fate would have it, Shelley finds happiness and a family at the Playboy Mansion with Hugh Hefner. Through a comedy of errors and ironies, Shelley becomes a sorority mother. And through her guidance and wisdom, she guides the sorority girls in finding their rite of passage in the beauty of their inner and outer selves, in those around them, and in the wisdom of the world. The entire cast is marvelous, including Anna Faris, Katherine McPhee, Rumor Willis, Colin Hanks, Emma Stone, Christopher McDonald, Beverly D'Angelo, and, last but not least, Hugh Hefner.
She didn't say Emma Stone. He didn't say Emma Stone.
He did.
Okay.
The costumes are delightful, and so are the sets. The script is funny, appropriately showing the joys, the disappointments, and the ironies of life. Both the cinematography and direction are good. The House Bunny 2008 is definitely an empowering uplift, which I think those... I don't know why it won't show me the rest of it. It looks like there's more, but it won't show me the rest.
Weird.
I think it's enough either way.
I think that we got the picture.
I think I've seen what you're putting down. Only 4 out of 14 people found that review helpful.
Wow.
That is a really...
strange.
This man is... can I follow this man? He also just loves, like, any movie that's, like, gay. He hates Star Wars, The Clone Wars. We're gonna... loves Night at the Museum.
Loves Baby Mama.
The Gospel was his first ever review.
Strange.
It feels like 2008 was the time he was writing.
So we have a Christian gay man who lives in Connecticut who is disabled.
And whose mom died when he was 12.
Okay. Got a picture.
Can I follow this man? I don't have an account on IMDb. I'm just going to go ahead and take a screenshot of his name. Keep that in the back pocket.
Yes, definitely.
Wow.
That was a ride.
Wow. Wow. I mean, who knew Pineapple Express was going to lead us down such a road? That truly might have been a more compelling story than Pineapple Express. I'm not, well, I mean.
More emotional, certainly.
Certainly more emotional. A lot more straight edge.
Pineapple Express is trying to sell you weed.
You're like, yes.
Yeah.
Big weed. You know big weed.
You know big weed.
They're everywhere. Oh my god. Well, wow. Okay. What? I did not expect this episode to take that turn or go that direction, but here we are.
Here we are.
Okay. Ooh. Well, was it worth it for it to be a little late? I think so.
I think so, too.
We talked about Pineapple Express for 20 minutes. We talked about this guy's life for another 20.
thanks, okay, guys. So we're doing the movie Ready or Not.
Yes.
For Patreon. Yep. I don't think you don't have to have seen the movie, but it's really fun. We found it on HBO Max, and it kind of reminds me of Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
And I really like it.
I'm excited. I haven't seen it yet. But
all right. Thanks, guys.
All right, guys.
Bye.